Captain Buxton, reel 5.
There must have been times in the war, I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, yeah, when there was some real doubt about the ability of the Allies to actually win the war. I'm thinking of particularly of the the German spring offensives in 1918, when things were sort of touch and go for a while.
Yes, it was desperate. Spring 18, you said?
Yes.
Well, you see, when I was wounded, there was nothing between us and the Navy. And we knew if they got through that we were done. And that's why I was wounded 4 times in 12 hours, because it was a moment to stay with the company. We were doing a desperate defence. The French had left their trenches on our right, and we were therefore in a very awkward position.
Did you consider as a real possibility that the war might have been lost at that time?
I don't think we ever considered such a thing as possible. I mean, it was typical Yorkshireman and a typical young fellow in charge.
Yes.
It just didn't cross our minds, but we knew we had to fight for it.
Was war weariness ever a significant factor in the British Army in France? I mean, were there times when one's distaste and horror of the war and the casualties became so strong that you ceased to care who won the war as long as the darn thing was over?
I think that was certainly so, particularly in some divisions which in quick succession had very heavy casualties. And it seemed hopeless. They had done a marvellous job, but they had no strength for more. And it was disheartening. I don't think we ever had a close enough succession of heavy fighting not to recover from it.
Yes.
Particularly as we did everything we could to keep a heavy family party going.
Yes. Tommy, when the war finally finished, as far as you personally were concerned, did you feel that, you know, the whole thing had been worthwhile, the sacrifices?
Oh, I was still in bed from my wounds. And I hadn't any question. I mean, I was thankful that I had been involved and that we had won. I should have been horribly ashamed of myself if I hadn't been. And I think that was the spirit of the majority. There may have been some who had things like shell shock and so on, who felt it was all a farce. And there are others who were politically educated to feel it was a farce.
As far as you were concerned, did the feeling that it had been all worthwhile stay with you after the war?
Oh, yes. I mean, I have no doubt now that though I've been on two sticks for 50 years, I'm glad I went through with it. I wouldn't have been glad to have dodged it.
Now, at the beginning of 1918, in January, when you were serving with 49th Division, you had your first taste of one of the new and most horrible weapons of the First World War, namely of mustard gas. In what way, from the point of view of an infantry soldier like you, was a mustard gas attack different from the kind of gas attacks that have preceded it?
Relax. First of all, I might say that I think it was earlier than the beginning of 1918, probably. But historians will quickly find that out. I think it was 2 or 3 months earlier than that. But let me say this. We happened to have the first mustard gas came over onto our brigade. And it was said that we had 2,500 casualties with 250 blind. At the time, it was believed that all of them would get through and be all right. Though I do know that my own sergeant major could never go back to painting because something in one or other gas that he had was drawn out by the paint. Anyway, this gas came over, and it was, as we discovered afterwards, a little bottle of about 2 or 3 inches inside the shell, which when the shell broke, it burst the bottle and the liquid in it sank into the ground. Immediately there was a strong smell of mustard and we put on our gas masks. Gradually that mustard smell disappeared and we imagined the gas had blown away, and so eventually we took off our helmets. We went, however, conscious of the fact that the gas was still in the ground, and next morning was a lovely morning with the sun out, and it brought all this gas up with very little smell. And wherever you sweated in your body, under your arms, in your eyes, and so on, you had burns and pain of that kind. So we learned that when it was mustard gas, we had to be careful not only on the day, but on the day after. I don't know whether I'm right in this, but I have a slight recollection that eventually a gas officer was appointed in each battalion who was able to advise company commanders about when to take off their helmets and so on. But I may be incorrect on that.
So it wasn't really a case of the available gas masks being inadequate to deal with mustard gas. It was rather that one's knowledge of its effect when it was first used was limited.
I think that was certainly so, but I do nevertheless add this, that they produced another addition to the container after the gas, a mustard gas attack. So they may have had some extra security when they knew what was happening.
Yes. Now, since mustard gas attacked any parts of the exposed skin, the defences you'd need against it would be more than the mask itself. What other kind of measures did you adopt?
They didn't give us any other. Really, it was impossible. We couldn't be kind of dressed up. There was nothing else that we were given. Of course, the difference between this and the ordinary gas which came from trench mortars was that when the ordinary gas came over, you saw the cloud coming, and you saw it go.
Could one distinguish a gas shell attack from a gas shell bombardment from any other kind of artillery bombardment?
Well, the smell.
Yes.
You did get a smell from any gas, of course, yes. But particularly from the mustard gas.
There you go.
I was wounded on the last German attack, trying to get between us and the Navy, and when they failed, they went down to the French.
This was in the 1918 spring
offensive? April 22, yes. Mm. Well, then, on July 14, records tell us that the chief of the Imperial German staff, Ludendorff, said that victory was assured to the Germans within a month. Bonnelaw said to the cabinet that we were, on the same day, in the cabinet, we were in danger of defeat within a month. 3 days later, Lloyd George went to the king and asked for a day of prayer. That very day, and I would remind you, before ye call, I will answer. Incidentally, Lloyd George's call was for the 4th of August, the date when war had originally started. That very day, Foch, owing to British Secret Service, got to know the German attack plans, had withdrawn his troops and let them come. And on that day, he counterattacked on the north and on the south and cut them. And Ludendorff, in 3 days after, July 17, wrote in his diary, "We are no longer able to have anything more than an equal victory." I forget the phrase.